The Drive continues with Need to Know Basis on TSN 1200.
The Drive on TSN 1200. Here's what you need to know today. Ottawa Senators in action tomorrow against the Toronto Maple Leafs. They called up Kevin Mandelaise today from Belleville. They got two healthy goaltenders in the entire system, other than Levi Marilainen, who's over in Europe, with the injury to Cam Talbot. They did not practice today. Catch the Sens and Leafs tomorrow on TSN 1200. Vancouver Canucks have given a two-year deal to Andre Kuzmenko. It's worth $11 million, so an AAV of $5.5 million. Frank Reich, the new head coach of the Carolina Panthers, and Nathaniel Hackett back in the NFL as offensive coordinator of the New York Jets. That's what you need to know today as we bring in our TSN football insider on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline, the one and only Dave Naylor. Dave, how you doing today?
Very well, guys. Very well. Man, lots going on for, I guess it's not really off-season of football, CFL off-season, but we feel like football never has an off-season. It's not like hockey where all the business gets done, you know, in the first 10 days of July, and then you can't find anybody in hockey for like 2 months. There's no such thing like that in football. I guess the NFL kind of has July and the CFL has December. Those are about as close you get as sort of dead months in football.
Well, I want to start with the Buffalo Bills because I know you spent a lot of time covering them down the stretch. Manhandled at home by Cincinnati, 27-10, the final in the AFC divisional playoffs. So it'll be Cincinnati and Kansas City, Philadelphia and San Francisco in the conference championship games. But what's your sense on the Bills? Because there's been, I think that's probably the team this week under the gun the most. You know, Dallas, there's been some heat for sure. And Jacksonville and the Giants had such great surprising seasons that I think they were playing with house money. But in Buffalo, it feels like there's some pressure that's starting to mount, in particular on the head coach, Sean McDermott.
I would not say the pressure is mounting on the head coach. Everything you said, I would agree with, except that, and I'll explain why in a moment. You know what? I'll tell you, for listeners to this station, it's very familiar to me, being around the Bills this year, that they feel a lot like kind of the Ottawa Senators of the early millennium, if you know what I mean. Oh my God, we used to suck and now we have all this great young talent and oh my God, we're winning like regular season games as if they're like candy, they're easy and every year at the playoffs. Like, and do we blow it up or do we tweak with it? Or like that was the narrative in Ottawa for what about 5 years, right? And it's kind of the narrative in hockey in Toronto right now. Yeah, well it very much is. And the Bills are on the same path, right? They were terrible for 20 years. They had some really good drafts in 17 and 18 where they got, you know, foundational players like Josh Allen and Tremaine Edmonds. And, you know, they hit on a few other guys that have through the trade, through the Steph Diggs and such. And they won 8 straight games before they lost on Sunday. It's not like this team struggled or, you know, they can't beat anybody. They won 8 in a row, you know, and they lost 3 games this year. You know, one of them freakishly in overtime against the Vikings, you know, on a game where Josh Allen fumbled on a goal line, right? Like late in the game, one in a heat wave where half the roster was, you know, on IV, lying on the sidelines against the Dolphins. Again, another freaky game where if you look at the stats of that game and asked who won, you can't make a case that the Dolphins won, except they did. And then kind of a weirdo game against the Jets. So I think we got to pump the brakes here on the tear down, get rid of the coach, pressure, like just, whoa, okay? They sucked on Sunday, no question. And they did the antithesis of what every football team is supposed to do, and that is play your best football at the end of the season. Their best football might have been, you know, September the 8th in L.A. on Thursday, an opening night. Frank Flatto didn't play very well down the stretch. I mean, they struggled to beat the Dolphins against a third-string quarterback. They beat the Patriots the week before with 2 kick return touchdowns, which, you know, hadn't happened in the NFL in a decade. So, you know, the issue is the playoffs. And I think, you know, just that why, when we go against good teams at this time of year, you know, are we not at our best? That's what I think the Buffalo Bills have to figure out. And It's probably more of a conversation about defense than offense, which sounds weird because they only scored 10 points. But I think if you look at the Bills' history under this coaching staff, when they play a good team in the playoffs, or really good teams, period, really good offenses, as good as their defense can be the rest of the season, they tend not to be able to shut down the high-end guys. And, you know, Joe Burrow demonstrated that as well as anyone. I mean, they scored 27, but they basically stopped trying, you know, once they got to the fourth quarter. It was just kill the clock. So there is a lot of pressure on the organization, but I don't think it's on any one person. I don't think it's on the GM. I don't think it's on the coach. Sean McDermott still has the highest winning percentage in Buffalo Bills history, higher than Marv Levy. So, you know, I think we're ways away before we get to that stage, but this is the narrative certainly has changed for the Bills heading into next season.
Here's why I bring that up, because I've heard multiple people in the national media, you know, basically saying the heat's going to be on Sean McDermott going forward. And there's been a couple of reasons why. I mean, Brian Daboll is getting a lot of credit for what he did with Josh Allen. And a lot of people seem to think he's regressed, at least in terms of, you know, ball management, right? And taking care of the football over the course of the last year. And, you know, one of the things that's been brought up over the last week is the fact that the NFL has kind of changed from, you know, Bill Parcells and Belichick and all these coaches that were defensive football coaches, right? Pete Carroll is one of those guys as well. But 7 of the 8 teams and all 4 coaches left are offensive coaches. And it's interesting to me. Again, on the surface, I wouldn't think, given the success that they've had, that he should be a guy that's under the gun, but it is interesting to see a lot of teams go in that direction where they focus on offense, and the success that these teams are having. And Brian Daboll seems to be getting a lot of credit for the success of Josh Allen.
Yeah, no question. Brian Daboll has done a great job. I'm going to argue with a couple of premises here. But well, first of all, when it comes to offensive mind power, I believe the Bills have 3 former offensive coordinators on their staff. Ken Dorsey is their OC. He's a first-year OC, and I think he got outmanaged in that game against the Bengals, no question. But again, like, you know, they had one of the highest offenses, output offenses in the league. My point is they have loads of offensive mind brain power on that. And look, a lot of people will tell you, you know, the coach is more the CEO than he is the coach, right? The coaches are more the coordinators. You know, the staff is more hands-on, and the coach ultimately approves, you know, the game plan, everything they're doing. But you can make the argument that that's as important as who your head coach is. On Josh Allen, okay, statistically, Josh Allen had almost an identical season to the one he had a year ago. Here's what he didn't do. He didn't go to the playoffs and throw 9 touchdowns, 650 yards, and no interceptions, which is what he did last year. You know, he had arguably one of his worst games, I would say his worst game. So he ends on a thud. That's a big difference. He had the elbow injury, which limited him for, you know, maybe about a half dozen games. And I think the Bills receivers underachieved this year. And I'm not talking about Stephon Diggs. I'm talking about the drop-off from Stephon Diggs down to Gabe Davis and Isaiah McKenzie. Remember, Gabe Davis goes from being a number 4 to a number 2 this year, and Isaiah McKenzie goes from being a backup to number 3. So they promoted from within, and I don't think they got the production out of those guys or out of Dawson Knox. So, again, it's not an individual sport. Even turnover-wise, Josh Allen was very similar to what he was a year ago. The timing of his turnovers was a little different. He led the league in red zone turnovers with 5. And red zone turnovers are points off the board. So that's a fair area to criticize. But I don't think there's – look at it this way. I'm not even sure Josh Allen took a step back this year. I just think he didn't take the step forward that a lot of people were anticipating for him coming off the way last season ended.
So how many changes do the Bills make? I'm always intrigued by these situations, right? I'd love to know behind the scenes what they're doing to try and understand why what happened to them happened.
Go with Chris.
No, just and to me, it would make for one of those great behind the scenes documentaries that have become so popular now, just that internal navel gazing, right, to try and figure out why you didn't meet your potential. I mean, it sounds like you don't think they need to make that much in the way of changes.
Well, again, I take you back to those senator conversations of 20 years ago, right? It was exactly the same thing. Like, do we mess with this or do we just change around the edge? And I think that is the debate. And, you know, Brandon Bean, the Bills GM, I've had an opportunity to sit in on a few of his, you know, media sessions over the course of the season. He is one of the more revealing guys you will ever talk to in sports about exactly that process, right? Yeah. And it was interesting after the trade deadline. He went, like, there were all these rumors about guys that the Bills were interested in. And he went, like, one by one and said, yeah, we made calls on that one. We didn't make calls on that one. Like, and I was like, wow. Like, like in the NFL, you don't hear this, right? Like, he actually walked through who they've been interested in and why they turned away, you know, at a certain point. Which, and in his postseason news conference, again, very enlightening guy in a world where, you know, top executives often tell you nothing. So, back to your question, what do I think they'll do? I think they're going to look at the receiving unit. I think, you know, I wouldn't be shocked to see the Bills, you know, I don't know where they're picking. It's going to be like 27 or something. I wouldn't be shocked to see them go receiver even with their first pick. Mm-hmm. Like, and try to get an impact guy. And you look at some of the guys that were taken in the first two rounds this year, you know, these are players, you know, look at Wilson with the Jets, look at George Pickens with the Steelers. Those are not high picks, but there are guys that came in as rookies and were able to have impact. That's one area. I think they're going to have to upgrade the offensive line. You know, that was an issue that they couldn't run the ball at the end of the season. And beyond that, you know, this team's a little bit hamstrung. In fact, Brandon Bean basically said, you know, Von Miller, the big ticket we spent last year, is still the big ticket this year. Like, there's not going to be another, let's go out and pay $20 million for a top level free agent, because, you know, that ticket is already spent for the last few years. So the big one they got to decide on is Tremaine Edmonds. I mean, he made $12.7 million this year. He's probably their best defensive player. He's played five NFL seasons and he's 24. You know, he was Brandon Bean's first round pick. He's probably due for a $20 million contract, so they're going to have to bring him back. I think they're going to have to be very sort of strategic and thread the needle a little bit in free agency. If they want to upgrade the offensive line, you know, they're going to have to find guys that they find value in. Same thing on the defensive line, which, yeah, and Sean McDermott was pretty candid as well. You know, he believes that basically you start building good teams through the offensive and defensive lines, and I think both those areas for the Bills this season, I want to say they underachieved, but maybe they left a little bit to be desired. So I think a receiver, I think both offensive and defensive lines. And beyond that, you're looking at a lot of kind of, you know, internal promotion for maybe guys that they can't afford to bring back. But that's kind of been the Bills' way. They, team-wise, they're not afraid to promote guys that they've drafted and developed and identified as improving into starting roles. And I think you're going to see a fair amount of that. But it's not going to – there's going to be no Von Miller, you know, ticket this offseason where they're going to address this area by going out and paying top of the market value for a marquee free agent.
Dave Naylor is our guest, our TSN football insider. One more NFL before we turn our attention to the CFL. And just what do you make of the conference championship games this weekend? It feels like we've got four teams left that are worthy championship type teams.
Yeah, I it's funny because one of my criticisms of every time a league expands the playoffs is, you know, you can get fluke champions that way. But you don't have one that whoever wins this from here on, there's no fluke. I love the way the AFC has kind of, that Cincinnati and Kansas City have kind of separated themselves from the rest of the AFC. And it's interesting from a Buffalo perspective because they're so focused on getting past Kansas City. And now it's like while they were doing that, you know, the Bengals passed them in the rearview mirror. And I think it's really, you know, these two teams are heads and tails ahead of anybody in the AFC. And it's interesting because the Chiefs you think of as sort of being on top because they've won a Super Bowl. Cincinnati hasn't. But these Bengals are 3-0 against these Chiefs. And I think there's not going to be a lot of people surprised, and not just because of what they did last week in Buffalo, but if they go into Kansas City and win this game. You know, the Bengals had a really banged up offensive line, but I think they kind of adjusted their game and that Burrow was just getting the ball out so quick. And they almost didn't need an offensive line. It was like, snap the ball in the shotgun. you know, watch him take three steps and bang, ball out. You know, even if you wouldn't have anybody blocking you, it was hard to get to the quarterback. And, you know, that's not the way the Chiefs play. The Chiefs extend the play with Patrick Mahomes and allow time for their receivers. Patrick Mahomes throws outside the pocket more than any quarterback in the NFL. So is he going to be able to play that way? You know, or are they going to have to say, okay, you're going to play more like Joe Burrow does, which is, you know, get the ball, make your read, get the ball out quickly, because you can't run around like you could, like you used to. You can't buy time like you could. So, you know, that, I think that's that in the two run games. I like what Kansas City brings in Isaiah Pacheco. I think he's been a real, you know, for a rookie, has gave him a really good presence all season, did again last week. And we've kind of written off the Bengals as a rushing team. I mean, they didn't do it all year. And then last week, their two backs went for 138. Joe Mixon had his second 100-yard rushing game of the year. So that's the other curiosity to me, is can the Bengals bring that two-dimensional offense the way they did against Buffalo? Because a lot of people didn't see that coming.
CFL, Bo Levi Mitchell goes to Hamilton. I mean, you guys have been talking about this for weeks, both you and Farhan Lalji, that you thought that was going to be the case. And sure enough, he ends up signing there after they traded for his rights. What does this make? What do you make of this in terms of how it shapes not just the East, but the entire CFL quarterback situation?
Well, I think it put a real charge into the season, you know, and not just in Hamilton. But I mean, Bo Levi Mitchell's, you know, he's a star in the Canadian Football League, and he lost his job with a team that had been as deeply invested in him as any team is in its quarterback. He lost his job after a win. I mean, he lost his job. I don't believe his team had a losing record. I mean, it was, you know, when you put that context around it, it's pretty stunning, the transformation that took place. And then, of course, they committed to Jake Mayer with the contract extension in midseason, all but guaranteeing where Bo Levi Mitchell was going to be. But yeah, I think it comes down to this, guys. There's two types of injuries in football, right? There's the ones you suffer an injury, you do your rehab, you get back, you're healthy, and you go. But then there's the ones that linger. And sometimes it's those injuries that everybody knows about that just kind of never get right. And sometimes it's not even things that ever kept you out of a game or kept you out of part of a season. It's not in the news, but you're just banged up. That's the question for me about Bo Levi Mitchell. He turns 33 this spring. He's played a lot of football in his life, but he hasn't played a ton of football in the last 3 or 4 years when you factor that he didn't play in 2020 and he was a backup for the last two thirds of last season. And you know, he told me the other day, he said, you know, it's the healthiest I've ever got to December. And it's great to walk into the weight room and not be rehabbing, you know, so he's healthy. And I think the question is now, can he live up to the expectations? If he doesn't, people are going to start to wonder, you know, is he one of those guys who's, he's not recovering from a particular injury. He's just been banged around too much to ever be able to throw the ball the way he used to. But I think he brings all those intangibles. I mean, you just listened to that news conference the other day. You know, he's for the intangibles and the personality and the leadership that he brings to a situation. You know, those are all, I think, things that maybe Hamilton didn't get enough out of with Dane Evans. And Dane Evans, by his own admission, you know, said he struggled more with the leadership aspect of being the guy in Hamilton, even than the football playing part. It was different when Jeremiah was there. He leads in a different way, and once it was his team to lead, he kind of, you know, had to evolve along the course of the season. I think with Bo Levi Mitchell, they get a guy who's done that, played that role, and I think it shifts things in the East. Begs the question of where Dane Evans is going. Wouldn't shock me if he went to Ottawa and reunited with Jeremiah Mazzoli in a backup role and gave them the 1-2 that Hamilton had that worked so well, and gives him a little bit of a kind of pause, you know, to kind of, you know, he's not an old guy. Like, he could take a season as a backup to try to, you know, play the long game here with his career. I haven't talked to him. I haven't asked him about that. That's just me speculating. But, you know, if there's not a starting role for him, and the only one that would seem to be right now would be Saskatchewan, you know, I think that would make a lot of sense for Dane Evans. But you know, Bo Levi Mitchell, I think the big key, the Hamilton guys were grinning, not just because they got Bo Levi Mitchell done, but they got it done 2 weeks before the start of free agency or the legal tampering period, because he becomes the card that they take into free agency with them. And I think between Orlando Steinauer as head coach and Bo Levi Mitchell as quarterback, there's going to be a lot of guys that are going to want to play in Hamilton next season.
Mm. How do you see Saskatchewan addressing their QB issue?
I think they got to make a call on Dane Evans. You know, like, And it's a real hard one, right? Because, like, Chris, you know, like when we cover athletes and they actually show us the human side of themselves, we never want to criticize them for that, right? We never want to say a guy was weak or this because he showed us his emotions. And Dane Evans did that. I mean, he did. He had some real traumatic losses, you know, where he turned the ball over late in games that it looked like they had won early in the season. And he took those hard. You know, he talked about going to see a sports psychologist last fall and to, you know, to his credit, played better in the back third of the season than he had earlier. And, you know, he had some injuries and things like that, but he wasn't the Dane Evans that they had seen in 19 or in 21, you know, 19 where he, you know, was their starting quarterback for the back half of the season of a team went 15-3 and was a heavy favorite in the Grey Cup. So here's the problem for me with Dane Evans is that if the kind of pressure and the expectations and that kind of stuff was something that he, you know, had trouble managing as his first time as the guy, like there may not be a harder place to manage those things than not just Saskatchewan because it's Saskatchewan, but Saskatchewan in this circumstance, right? Mm. Because they did this thing where they got rid of the OC and told the quarterback or told the world they didn't want the quarterback back and kind of didn't say anything to the quarterback. Well, then they end up not being able to hire an OC from outside the organization because everybody wants to know who the quarterback is and they can't answer that. And you got the coach on the final year of the deal. So look, they keep Kelly Jeffrey, who they promote. I believe he was the running back coach. And he may do a great job. I'm not saying he's the wrong choice. I'm just saying they got turned down by a lot of people based on the dynamics there who looked at that and went, whoa. So I don't think there's going to be a side of the ball on any team in the CFL next year that's going to be as under the gun and scrutinized as tightly as the offensive side of the ball for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders because of the way last season ended, because of the way this has transpired through the offseason. So that's what Dane Evans would be stepping into. And, you know, look, that's going to be a hard gig if you're not good right out of the gate. You know, they – 1-3 or, you know, 2-5 or something like that out of the gate. And you struggle as the quarterback in that circumstance. You got a first time OC, a head coach who didn't get an extension, a team that's coming off a disappointment that's kind of struggling in its market for how they normally are. And you're the guy who's supposed to fix it all. So maybe Dane Evans would be the right guy for that. And he could handle it all. All I'm saying is that is going to be for anybody a situation that comes with a load of pressure.
What's your next assignment?
I am not going to the championship games this weekend, but I am leaving a week from Sunday for Super Bowl. And then after I get back from that, about 10 days later, I'll be going to the NFL Combine. There are quite a few Canadians that are that are going to get, you know, some attention in the NFL draft. And a couple of them that I'll be doing a fair amount of work on this spring through the offseason are the twins, Sidney and Chase Brown. Chase was the number two rusher in the NCAA this year at Illinois. He led the nation for most of the year till the very end. Sidney led the team in interceptions, was a captain on the number two defense in all of college football. Both of them are expected to get drafted. They're kids out of London, Ontario, and they're both going to be in the Senior Bowl next year. Actually, there'll be four Canadians in the Senior Bowl next week in Mobile, Alabama. I'm sure that is the most ever. That is the number of all the college all-star games that sprinkle all over. That's the only one that's sponsored by the NFL. That's the number one. That's the one you want to be in. And there's four Canadians in that game, and I expect they're all going to be at the Combine as well. So, you know, pretty busy offseason all along.
Good stuff. Always great insight. Appreciate the time. And we'll talk to you in the next couple of weeks. Look forward to your Super Bowl coverage.
Well, thanks so much, AJ. Good to talk to you as always. And TJ, good to catch up with you.
Yeah, you too. Thanks, Dave.
Bye.
Dave Naylor joining us in the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. Gabriel Pizza is the official pizza of the Ottawa Senators.
Man, he knows his stuff, eh?
Yeah.
What a good listen.
Just fascinating to see because, again, there seems to be a lot of, at least nationally, right? Can't speak for that market. I know driving back from Buffalo after the Miami game, the usual, why is he calling his timeouts here and that sort of thing. But nationally, he's under the gun a little bit. And I looked at, okay, what teams might be under the gun that were playoff teams this year? And I feel like there's four where there's going to be a little bit more pressure. Doesn't mean it's Super Bowl or bust, right, for Sean McDermott. But you feel like there needs to be some improvement. Chargers as well. Cowboys, always pressure. Although, seems like Jerry,
sure,
he seems to like Mike McCarthy.
Oh, the best. The best.
JR's tweet made me laugh.
Yeah.
Quietly.
Quote tweeting Ed Werder.
Quietly to myself.
Mike McCarthy described his relationship with Jerry Jones as being in a great place and says the owner has told him multiple times this week he wants him to coach the Cowboys for as long as Tom Landry did, 29 years.
All right.
Yes, please.
And JR said, please, let's make this happen. As spoken as a true Eagles fan.
And more Cowboys news from Ed Werder this afternoon. Dan Quinn, their defensive coordinator, interviewed with the Cardinals yesterday, but has informed them and other teams that he's remaining with the Cowboys. So Dan Quinn will not be jumping ship. His quote, unfinished business here in Dallas. My complete focus is helping the team play championship ball in 2023. So probably good news for the Dallas defense, at least.
Cowboys, Chargers, Bills, and Buccaneers. And the Bucs aren't a contender, but the other three should be good teams next year. And I feel like there's some pressure on the coaches to at least hit a certain standard. Maybe Sean Payton waiting in the wings in a year if he decides, you know what, maybe there will be some better teams in a year than right now. Back with our web poll question of the day and some more of your texts at 12-1200, where standard messaging rates apply as we continue with The Drive on TSN 1200.
The Drive continues on TSN 1200.
It's The Drive on TSN 1200. AJ Jakubek, Chris Stevenson, Matt Konosfida. It's not Luba.
Nor is it Nana.
Is that not a Luba song?
No.
What does Luba sing?
Yeah.
I can't think of any Luba songs, but 99 Red Balloons is not a Luba song. I'm not familiar. I know the name, but I couldn't name a single Luba song.
The Googles will have to help us.
Let It Go. The Best Is Yet to Come. How many?
Doesn't matter. Who is it?
This is Goldfinger.
Oh, okay. It's The Drive on TSN 1200. AJ Jakubek, Chris Stevenson, Matt Konosfida, our TSN 1200 web poll question of the day for the Tool and Equipment Store. What will the Sens do with Ridly Gregg's season? Full-time in Ottawa, up and down with the B-Sens, sent down to stay. What are you voting, CJ?
Up and down. If for no other reason that you have to consider, I did the math. There are three Belleville games during the break. I think they send him down to play the games with Belleville during their break.
Would
now,
that
if you want
be...
to count that as being up and down or whatever, it's what fits out of the choices.
I'll say that's still full time.
He will be playing games in Belleville, AJ. Do you have to go down to play games in Belleville? You do.
Will he miss games in Ottawa? That's the question.
No, that's not the question. The question is, will he be up and down?
AJ's telling you how to interpret the web poll question. Well, when generally, as a rule, you interpret it the way you want.
If
but
you were in full-time
for AJ's
in Ottawa,
purposes.
If you play every game from the end of the season... Between now and the end of the season, to me, that is full-time in Ottawa.
To you. Okay.
Do you think he plays any more than those three games in Belleville? Do you think he misses any games in Ottawa where he is healthy?
I haven't looked at the schedule. Typically, the American Hockey League schedule regular season goes a little bit longer than the NHL schedule does. I think he's got a few Belleville games in his future. But I hope he plays well enough, since we're here now into all getting, you know, how do you feel about the questions? What I feel for Sens fans.
How you feel about it?
I hope that he plays well enough and has enough of an impact that yes, he does play all the rest of the Ottawa Senators games.
Which to me is full time in Ottawa. Can we just blame the question?
Sure. And our feelings.
There you go, JR. Too ambiguous. By the way, 68% say full time in Ottawa.
Whichever way you want to interpret full time in Ottawa.
Yes. 29% said up and down with the B-Sens. 3% said sent down to stay.
Makes sense.
We'll take a break.
So we can get in touch with our feelings.
I didn't think it had anything to do with feelings.
Apparently you can make the question be whatever you want it to be. If you want it to be about your feelings, let it be about your feelings. We're not judgy here.
There's a lot of different ways to interpret it without your feelings.
Careful.
But we ask you to go vote at tsn1200.ca or on the tsn1200 Twitter page. Back with more in a moment. We'll take some texts between now and the end of the show. This is The Drive on TSN 1200.
The Drive continues on TSN 1200.
There we go. We're talking about our feelings today here on TSN 1200, which is always a good thing.
Yep. Good call there, Matt.
AJ Jakubek, Chris Stevenson, Matt Conisvita.
Got to give a shout out to Brad on Twitter as well from Natural Stat Trick.
Yeah.
Who I had this queued up.
Yes.
And then I checked my Twitter and he had also tweeted at me. And you, CJ, Matty Valls, after the punk cover of 99 Red Balloons in that segment, you have to come back with a punk cover of Feelings for CJ, right? Oh, all over it, Brad.
Beautiful. What a connection we have with the TSN 1200 community.
We have the best listeners, don't we?
Right on.
I noticed we haven't gotten any more traffic updates from Joe the Leafs fan. And just looking at the roads this afternoon, way better. So big shout out to all of our snow clearing crews in the city as well.
Oh, man.
Who've been doing a phenomenal job.
Yeah.
Obviously, last night, a little hairy. This morning, I think, probably did not want to be out there. But this afternoon, it's been a pretty, for the most part, clean and clear commute. And so just a heck of a job to our snow clearing.
Less than 24 hours later from, what did they say?
27? Yeah.
Yeah. Don't take it for granted.
We've had 5 big dumps since December.
3 of which while my sister and her husband are away and I'm shoveling their driveway. Not that I'm counting.
The football field. The par 5.
3 dumps of 25 plus centimeters. So yes, thanks to everyone that makes our lives easier in these conditions.
Oh, Joe's in. He's still listening. Way better, Matthew. Way bleeping better. How's that for an update? Love it, Joe. Thank you, Joe.
So I'm going to see comedy tonight. I'm going to see an amateur night tonight on the West End somewhere. Looking forward to that.
Cool.
It's one of the things I really missed about the pandemic.
Yeah, yeah. So have you been a big, like, I don't think we've ever discussed this. Are you like a big like live comedy
guy? I usually go to, this is a Yuck Yucks thing tonight. I've always loved going to the amateur nights at Absolute Comedy. And when I was going a lot more 5 to 10 years ago.
Yeah.
But again, last few years, it's been difficult, right?
Yeah.
But one of the things I loved about live comedy and just going to the amateur nights midweek is you start to see some of the same people 6 months later, a year later, and you see just kind of the evolution, right? Mm-hmm. And some people it's like, hey, you're getting better. And some it's like, not really feeling it for you, right? But it's good. It's kind of cool to see, especially when you see people get better at it. They're working at. You know, they got a couple of good jokes, and they still keep that in there, and they add some other things. So looking forward to that tonight. What have you guys got on the docket?
Quiet night. I'll just be hunkering down and doing my best to be well-prepared for tomorrow's show. It's only a three-hour cruise tomorrow, right? So
might be a bit of a music theme Friday on the show.
Oh, excellent. Excellent.
Might be a little self-serving tomorrow with the music, but the good news is a lot of good tunes will fit, and AJ will be happy with a lot of the music. I got 3 hours until I'm off for a week. I don't have a whole lot on the go tonight either. Shoveling. Shoveling, putting chemicals in a hot tub, and more shoveling. Probably going to have to shovel. The plow hadn't been by on my street when I left for work, so I'm probably going to need to shovel my way into my garage and then over to my sister's to finish shoveling the par 5.
Jeez. The driveway wall at the bottom of your driveway.
Our side of the street always gets hit worse than as well.
So I park in
fun times.
I park in a lot now. And I got stuck the other night. Not 100% sure that, like, it's one of those things where, like, I don't know how long this is going to take to get out of the lot. Like, it might take 10 seconds, or I might be making some phone calls.
Help.
See if my landlord can come help me push.
Is the ivory tower around to help you get out of your spot?
Got a lot of leverage.
We'll see. It's a new spot. Only been stuck once in January, so that's a good thing. But that was earlier this week, and that was also at about 10:30 at night.
So you don't have snow tires, correct?
Oh, I know how to drive.
No, I'm not saying you don't know how to drive. It's just you can be the best driver in the world, but if you don't have snow tires sometimes, depending on the temperature, the weather, the snow under your tires just turns to ice, and no matter how much you want to try and rock it or whatever, if you're on that ice, you're not getting out. Maybe you just need to invest in a couple of those little metal grid things that you can just slip under the front of your tire, and your car just goes up onto the mat, and you're off and running. And you don't have to be on your phone trying to find somebody to help you.
Paying $80 a month now that I wasn't paying before? Guess what? That might include a couple of phone calls. That's the way it goes.
There's something wrong in that. I can't exactly put my finger on it. There's something wrong in
that
logic.
There's also something right in that logic.
You're pissed because you don't have your same spot, and now you have to be in a lot,
what you pay
and
for.
Somebody else is going to pay
for
it.
If it was free, maybe I'd call somebody else.
Somebody else is going to pay.
Yeah. I'm paying $80 more a month. That comes with perks. At least there's no contract here. In my mind, $80 more a month comes with perks.
That's a scary place to be.
That's the way it works.
Okay.
You know I'd come help you push, CJ.
Oh, I know you would, and I would too, but I'll be long gone by the time.
I'm not asking. I'm not making that call to you.
Yeah. I'd be happy to help.
No, it's all good. I'm actually quite confident I'm getting out today.
Okay.
Might take some shoveling. Might not. Might be done in 5 seconds. We'll wait and see.
I can't wait now till tomorrow to find out how it went.
We might need to cut into the Sens pregame show. We might not have enough time with our three-hour tour tomorrow.
Got some irons in the fire?
Yeah, the usual group that includes Vanessa Sanchez, Matt Scooby. He was at the game last night. A lot of CTV people at the game last night.
One of our irons in the fire's already come through.
Look forward to that.
Mike Zeisberger will join us tomorrow to talk Leafs and Sens at 2:25.
Good stuff.